Support for WYPR comes from the Park School of Baltimore's Saturday morning Rise and Shine activity sessions for children 3 to 5 years of age. Nature expedition through the Park School woods is April 20th. parkschool.net/shine.
Welcome to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And Cindy, last week we did fish.
Mm-hmm.
That was fun.
It was. Gotta
Makes
love
me
fish.
Think of being in warmer places and going swimming, honestly.
Swimming with the fishes.
Yeah, exactly. So it only makes sense to, for us to talk about shellfish and...
Who doesn't love shellfish?
Your favorite word, cephalopods.
Yes, yes. Those goofy things with tentacles and heads.
And deliciousness and ink.
Yummy. Yep, ink. Right. Yeah.
So,
all right.
I mean, how could you... I mean, without cephalopods, you could not have the squid ink spaghetti alla chitarra, which is one of the
yummy
great pieces of like umami art.
I saw a video of someone doing the actually cutting the pasta on the cutter the other day, and wow, it's just such I mean, I know we make it at one of our restaurants, but it's just really fun to get to see someone actually making it. It really is such an art, and it's such a pretty process.
Well, yeah, the old school way of cutting, so spaghetti alla chitarra, chitarra is guitar, mm-hmm. and so you would string guitar strings across something that looks a little bit like a weird square musical instrument almost,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and then it's a little bit bigger than the table that you roll the pasta out on, and then you just press it down,
mm-hmm.
and it's all cut.
Yeah. Yeah, roll a rolling pin over the top is what the lady was doing when I saw it.
Yeah.
Super cool.
So let's run through some shellfish greatest hits first.
Okay.
So let's talk about some shellfish, how to work with them, dishes, and maybe a wine to wash it down in a very, very pleasant way.
Mm-hmm. One of my favorites is I love mussels so much, and we often get some from up in Prince Edward Island. They're a nice size. They're not too big. They're not too little. They have a nice, sweet, briny taste to them. I think one of the biggest things that you have to deal with when you start talking about mussels or clams is that they suck in water that has sand in it. So you have to deal with the fact that they're processing sand as their bodily function. Lovely. And you need to get rid of that. You don't want to eat it, obviously, not desirable. So that's really the only challenge with cooking shellfish other than overcooking it. Never want to overcook it. So with something like mussels, let's say I'm going to do Provençal. And that's, you know, traditionally a little bit of shallot, garlic, white wine, tomato product, extra virgin olive oil or a good olive oil, a little bit of parsley to finish, salt and pepper.
By tomato product, you mean like crushed tomato?
Yeah, crushed tomato and its juice. So with the mussels, you want to steam them open. I like to steam them open in a little bit of white wine, water, bay leaf, whole black peppercorn, and maybe a little bit of shallot or some form of onion product. Shallot is really preferable because it's got a little bit higher sugar content. And you would have like sort of a wide-bottomed pan, and you want a lid for that pot. And you put the liquid in, maybe an inch or so, 2 inches or so, depends on how many mussels you're steaming open, and bring that liquid up to a boil. And one of the things you do to process the mussels prior to that is wash them really, really well in several washings of cold water. You do want to de-beard them. This is what they attach themselves to the bottom of the ocean floor with. They sort of dangle on this thing, and they're called beards. And that do not remove the beard until you're ready to cook them. In other words, don't do that the day before because they die when you remove the beard and you don't want to have dead mussels. Or that's undesirable, obviously, highly. So remove the beards as you've washed them through several washings of cold water. We also do something with clams where we will put them in, we'll wash them very, very well. Then we'll put them in a bucket with water and cornmeal, which will help to process out some of that sand as well. That is an overnight process. They need to sit in the refrigerator overnight And then you want to rinse those very, very well, because you also don't want to eat cornmeal in your products. You want to make sure they've been flushed out of that as well as the sand. But getting back to the mussels, so you have a clean mussel now. You go into that pot, you put the lid on, and you just kind of shake that pot a couple of times while it's boiling. You want it on high heat. And obviously you want enough liquid in there that it doesn't evaporate completely away. Obviously you'd end up with a burned up pan. You don't want that. You just want enough liquid to get the mussels to steam open. And that shaking process of the pan will help to jar them to open them. And you either want to stop the cooking process immediately there, which means it kind of depends on what you're doing with the mussels. If you are going to do eat them right away and serve them with Provençal, then you don't need to shock them or stop the cooking process. You can just take them right out. You can strain that liquid through a cheesecloth. Several layers of a cheesecloth will also get any residual sand out. Obviously, you want to discard that bay leaf and the whole black peppercorns. You're not going to want to eat those. So you're just going to just drain the whole thing or strain the whole thing through a couple layers of cheesecloth. And now you have the foundation of your sauce.
So you have the foundation of the sauce. And so you're going to add that to all of the other business, including the tomato and the wine and the shallot,
exactly,
and the onion that you have ready to go.
Exactly. And that really beautifully flavors that. And I like a little bit of extra virgin olive oil to finish at the end. It just kind of rounds out that tomato, that acidic tomato moment. And you can either use extra virgin olive oil, or you could finish with a little bit of cold butter, which, you know, I prefer, but I like both very, very much.
More olive oil, please. That's
yeah,
that's my side of the aisle.
And a little parsley at the end.
A couple of quick sort of editorial informational comments. One, if mussels don't open along with all the other mussels, don't eat that mussel.
Right.
That's
dead.
Not one that you want. Yeah.
Right.
Two, you want to toss the mussels with all of that sauce and all of that once you have it all developed.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And at least for a few passes.
Mm-hmm.
To get plenty of just mixing between the juice and the sauce and the sweet meat of the mussel and all that sort of business.
Mm-hmm.
You need to have crusty bread ready to go alongside that.
It's an emergency.
Absolutely.
If you don't have crusty bread right there.
and instead of parsley, it's basil I would toss in there.
Mm-hmm.
For me.
Mm-hmm. I do basil as well.
Yeah, but if you have that crusty bread ready to go, you can basically eat the mussels and then load the, you know, you can dip the, depends upon how tight the sauce is. If it's pretty tight, and you can spoon the tomato and all that business right on there, that is happy times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Now I'm really getting hungry right now because
it's
I could eat that.
It's good.
Oof.
For you. Now
love
I want
it.
The glass. Even in the cool weather, a nice Provençal rosé is exactly the right thing for that dish.
Okay. Good.
It has exactly the acidity that you need. Delicate white's not going to deal with the tomato well, no question.
Okay.
And a red, you don't need tannin for mussels.
Mm-hmm.
So there. I'm glad you started with mussels. Hey, what was that? As soon as you mentioned mussels, I always think of you had this mussel soup that was amazing and that basically nobody bought years ago. It was one of those few things that was really excellent that kind of just didn't take off.
Was it a cream-based soup?
It was.
Yeah, well,
I've met you.
okay, so you still handle the mussels the same way in that you steam them open and you end up with this wonderful cooking liquid that you strain. Then I would add lots of shallots, onion, a little bit of gently cooked garlic, that liquid, not much of it, but some of it, and reduce it down a little bit, and then add cream. And I steep saffron in white wine. And add that and a little bit of black pepper. And that is really, that's it. It's so good. It's a saffron cream based soup. And then garnish it with, I cut diamonds out of zucchini and blanch them or saute them. You can either way. That's part of the garnish in the bottom of the bowl. The mussels themselves are garnish in the bottom of the bowl. And a little bit of tomato concasse, which is when you take a fresh tomato, you put a little X in the bottom of, wash it, put a little X in the bottom of it, and blanch it for like 5, 10, 15 seconds in boiling water. You remove the skin, you cut it in half, you take all the seeds and the juice out, and you dice it. And what I like to do with the concasse is add extra virgin olive oil, salt, and pepper to that. I don't just put the straight tomato on. I feel that that needs to be seasoned before it can go into the bowl. And I'll drag a couple pieces of saffron in with that that tomato, and I will also put a drop of Tabasco in with that tomato because I love that little bit of heat, and then pour the soup over everything. And that's really one of my favorite soups I've ever made.
Absolutely. And it's one of those things that a couple would go out and it's like, oh, come on.
Come on, people.
But it's, that's the way that it is sometimes.
Yeah, you just never know. It used to be broth-based soups. We couldn't sell a broth-based soup to save our lives. You know, everybody wanted a cream-based soup. Everybody said they didn't want fried food, and that's all that would sell.
Absolutely.
yeah. That's the really funny thing. Oh, no, we want food that's low in fat, but let me have those fried oysters. You know, I get it. Mm-hmm. Just be honest with yourselves.
So let's talk oysters. Because I saw that sort of the three big schools of oysters, right? Mm-hmm. Oysters on the half shell with various garnishes. You can have lots of fun.
Yes.
Oysters that are very happy to be fried.
Yes.
And Lord knows the world.
I'm sort of familiar with that.
Unbelievably.
Yeah, I'm not giving out my fried oyster recipe.
I understand.
So we're going to have to talk about something else.
The main thing with fried oysters is just don't overcook them.
Yes. And they need to be fresh, like with all
seafood.
And you want
a fun something to dip them into.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, you serve them with lemon, cayenne, mayonnaise. There are a million sort of like almost herby, garlicky, happy, you know, aioli with a lot of fresh herbs in it, basically.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. That can do really well in that sort of situation. There are people who put remoulade sauce with fried oysters. That can be really good.
Mm-hmm. Tartar sauce.
Let's talk about baking oysters.
Okay.
And let's talk about raw oysters. Where do you want to start?
Well, I'm currently making a baked oyster. Believe me, if we were allowed to have a broiler in Baltimore City, I would be finishing them under a broiler, or a salamander, as we call them. But since we're not allowed to have one, I do mine in the oven. And we run our ovens at about 425 degrees on convection. If you put enough butter in there, you can get them to brown a little bit in that situation if you don't have a broiler at home. So it's very simple. We shuck the oysters.
I'm going to stop you and take you back to where you said, if you put enough butter.
You shuck the oysters, and you want to do your very best to retain every bit of the natural liquor in there, in that shell. So
that's really important.
It really is. And if you feel like you're just not can't do that, then at least reserve it somehow, you know, let everything drip into a container so you can put it back in there. And then we're, like I said, very simply, we're doing a small dice of bacon and browning that off, and sauteing baby spinach and adding the two things together, a little salt and pepper, and that goes on top of the shucked oyster. And then we use panko mixed with a little bit of melted butter, salt, and black pepper. And it should be a very light layer. One night my cooks put too much on, and I'm just like, no. That is no. Yeah, so a very light layer of breadcrumb on top. And I mean, in our oven at 425, it takes a solid 6 minutes, and they're perfect. And the oyster is hot, but it's not overcooked, and the breadcrumb does begin to brown, and that is just seriously good. There are like a million other ways you can do that, but that is basically a sort of a play on Rockefeller.
Mornay sauce.
I love Mornay sauce.
No,
go ahead.
But that's, yeah, just literally just broil an oyster with Mornay sauce. It's as, you know, as simple as detach it first.
Yeah.
There's nothing more frustrating for the person trying to consume that, but. Mm-hmm. That and a little breadcrumb is nice, but oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm. You know, the traditional way would also be to have had Perno in it. So you have to really like Perno to add that to the Rockefeller. A lot of people don't, which is why I just don't use it in this particular dish.
In the end, I love all kinds of oysters, but man, I love raw oysters so much. Hmm. And there's so many different kinds, and you can look up and find all the different West Coast oysters and all the Atlantic oysters, the French prize, you know, that, I mean, we have a wealth of oysters to play with. We're in the right place in the world for
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Where we are, the Chesapeake Bay, gosh, we have all kinds of fantastic oysters here.
Preparations on the half shell. I mean, that's the, what, what you grew up with here, right? People have cocktail sauce. People have lemon juice. I love mignonette, one, just mm-hmm. a basic, mm-hmm. you know, red wine vinegar, shallot, black pepper. And yeah. you just put a tiny little bit, just kind of like show off the oyster.
Yeah.
That's awfully fun.
Yeah, I think mignonette is one of the best.
I think so. The other thing I've come to love is a little bit of, we've done this in Italian cooking with a little sorbetto that's not too sweet. Making a sorbetto with Prosecco, mm-hmm. you know, the white wine that's sparkling and a mm-hmm. tiny bit sweet.
Yeah.
And having just a little tiny scoop of that with the oyster. That's a hugely different take and really great fun.
Cucumber sorbet is good with it too. I really like that. And also we've put caviar on them, which a lot of chefs do that now. And right.
There are worse things.
Yeah, right? Yeah, it's really the salty thing is pretty incredible. It's a beautiful combination.
Yeah, well, there are different kinds of salty. You know, caviar has more of an umami character, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Wines with raw oysters, man, there's a million ways to do that. I mean, the classic, you know, if you're having with mignonette and you're standing on a street in Paris and someone just shucked them for you, you're going to ask for a glass of muscadet, most likely.
Okay.
Right, melon grape, light, very dry, you know, very like mouth cleansing. Chablis is also another classic. Sort of like more, the more involved the preparation, the bigger the wine, you know.
Okay.
But yeah, Chablis is another great one. There are worse things than champagne, especially Blanc de Blanc champagne.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all Chardonnay. We're very light, bright, pure, lacy. Obviously the idea of the sorbetto with the sparkling wine and the raw oyster, that's ideal.
It's pretty just elegant. But,
mm-hmm. Well, and the texture of the bubbles, that fineness of the mousse of the sparkling wine, of the champagne with the oyster itself is a spectacular textural happiness essay. When we come back on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine, we've got more shellfish and all kinds of what Cindy described as things with tentacles to take on WIPR.
Support for WYPR comes from the Park School of Baltimore's Saturday morning Rise and Shine activity sessions for children 3 to 5 years of age. Nature expedition through the Park School woods is April 20th. parkschool.net/shine.
Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we're cruising through shellfish and cephalopods.
There's
a lot of shellfish. I don't know if we can get
to
cephalopods.
So exciting. Right? Maybe not.
We may
Maybe
have to do an all tentacles program if we can't get through this.
Ooh, sounds creepy.
Yeah, right. Why not?
Okay, so what's next? So, scallops?
If you like, sure.
Okay, all right. Yum. They're fun to shuck. Interesting to shuck when you get to see the whole
they are
shebang in there.
Beautiful in the shell. They
yeah,
are
they
beautiful
really are.
In the shell.
And sometimes the shells are really, really beautiful. Oh, and remember when bay scallops were so everywhere, like in the 80s? And then unfortunately they've sort of overfished them. But oh my gosh, bay scallops used to be just so easy to get. I love bay scallops. But
yeah, you could get Taylor Bays back in the day.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and those shells were gorgeous. So all pink and blue and green and oh my gosh. Yeah. But scallops are wonderful. Everybody likes them because they're so sweet and naturally sweet and clean tasting and not fishy. You know, when they're fresh, they're just so fantastic. And they're easy to cook fast. You can make dinner in 5 minutes with scallops. And I think the biggest thing is in the industry, we call them dry pack, which means that they have not been chemically treated. They are a nice fresh scallop, and that is the one that will sear nicely for you. You need a hot pan. This is when your steel pan comes in really nicely. You get your pan hot, you put a neutral oil in there. You can either pat dry your scallop before you put it in. That's always foolproof with any, you know, any kind of wet food product. And then just into that oil and be ready to go with whatever you're serving it with, because it's only going to take a couple minutes to cook them. Lightly salt them, maybe lightly pepper, but I don't ever actually put pepper on scallops. I just lightly salt them and out they go. I cook them to medium rare.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to carry over to maybe medium, something like that. But once you have good color on both sides, you're done.
Yeah, that's
if it's a monster scallop, one, good for you, and two, you give it a moment more. You know, you give it, what, 10 more seconds on each side?
Sure. Yeah.
It will continue to cook as it rests.
Well, and one of the things about the base scallops and the shell is you can steam those open to order, you know, I mean, as you're eating them, and then you can just go right into that same pan with your sauce. Maybe you're doing the same Provençal sort of thing we were talking about with the mussels.
Yeah, you treat it the same way.
Yeah, and so that's super fast and super good. And scallops also. All these things in shells are great to stuff. You can certainly what we used to do was we would take the sea scallops, the shell, we would cut them in half horizontally, put a little bit of our crab cake mixture in the bottom and put the scallop on top, put a little bit of butter on top and a little bit of breadcrumb and broil those in the, oh my gosh. And the crab cake mixture would just be a little bit looser than, with a little bit more mayonnaise. That's what you need to bake it in the oven like that. A little, you know, we barely put any breadcrumb in our crab cake mixture in the first place. So that's not an issue for us, but yeah, a little bit looser, and then put that raw scallop piece on top and that little bit of buttery breadcrumb on top. And, ooh, that is so, 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 so good.
It's a hard question between scallops and lobster as best match for, like, big, rich American Chardonnay from the West Coast. That's Sonoma Coast Chardonnay, and most scallop dishes are going to be really successful if you want an excuse to drink one of those guys. I think my favorite scallops end up being the wintry ones. And if you can get them with the roe, better and better. Mm-hmm. It's nice to have that like umami flavor along with the sweetness from the roe. But cauliflower puree, you can make cauliflower basically velouté like you make, right? Mm-hmm. And that's not so tough.
No.
Or a cauliflower puree that has at least a little bit of a potato in it for the starch and for the body, and less dairy, and just to have that, a little puree on the plate, and seared scallops on that guy, and then any kind of interesting mushroom. And if life is really good, if you have a little bit of fresh black truffle, that's a good landing place for that.
I love chanterelles and scallops together. So, so, so good.
Well, the chanterelles come across as fruity in that application. Mm-hmm. It's really, you know, they can be that apricotty kind of color, and they are almost that way in flavor.
I made cauliflower puree one time, and I didn't take it off the menu for months and months and months because I liked it so much. And honestly, I loved eating it when I was making it. It was, again, like so many things in the kitchen, it's a labor of love. And I just love making it. The process is so amazing. And then I just love tasting every moment of that process, which is we would boil the cauliflower in water with salt, and we would cook it a little bit more than al dente. You don't want it to be mush, obviously, but you don't want it to be raw.
You need to break that texture down a little bit.
Yeah. And then pop it in the food processor and just break it up into little pieces. Again, you're not making a puree. You're making sort of chopped up cauliflower, finely chopped up cauliflower. And then we put it back in the same pan we boiled it in, and it gets, a ton of butter, fresh lemon juice, a little bit of Dijon mustard, and salt and pepper. That's it. And it is so, 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 so good with a scallop. So good.
Oh.
I love
That's funny. I did not know your process. That's a totally different version from what I've seen with a little bit of potato where you, it's probably 90% cauliflower and 10% potato, and it's a little butter, and it's a little cream, and it's a lot of blending.
Yep. Yeah.
And always a tiny bit of, and a very tiny bit of nutmeg. And that's kind of, probably a bit more delicate flavor than.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely. That, yeah, no, this has got the Dijon and the lemon. I mean, it's going to wake you up, but it's not like out of balance. Super
I'm
good.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, do you want to talk about lobsters?
Oh, please.
I mean, that's, and we always think of it. It is a luxury thing. It's a special thing.
Well, especially right now.
Yeah.
No prices question. Are, wow, crazy, crazy high. Yeah, but I mean, there's so many things you can. What, like one of my favorite things is a vol-au-vent with lobster. We make, because the shells produce such a great stock.
So vol-au-vent is windmill. In right. In,
yeah.
In French. Mm-hmm. And it's a particular puff pastry form that reminds you of that.
Yeah, it has twisted ends. You cut out a triangle, and you cut out an inner triangle of the puff pastry, but two of the corners of the triangle are still attached. There's a cutter for it. And also, a vol-au-vent, I have seen vol-au-vents in a circle before, by the way. But this is a traditional vol-au-vent, so what you do is you cut that out, and then you brush the whole thing with egg wash. And then you pull one end over the other, and you attach it, and you brush that with egg wash. That rises with a hole in the center, or the ability to create a hole in the center of the pastry. It is perfect little pocket for all kinds of goodness. And I actually wrote that down as one of the things I wanted to talk about, because it is such a great vehicle for scallops, shrimp, lobster, you know, all kinds of shellfish. So... you know, getting back to lobster, it produces such a great stock. So when you go to steam your lobsters or boil them in water with mirepoix, a little bit of tomato paste, bay leaf, peppercorn, and mirepoix being carrot, celery, and onion, we boil our lobsters. We don't steam them. And we cook, we buy 1 pound culls, which means that one of the claws has been lost. They only have one claw, but they have a tail. And obviously, they're live and in their shell. So we cook them for 6 minutes. And then we remove them. And we put a skewer through the tail so that they stay straight, which is not a fun process, quite
otherwise,
frankly.
It curls up in a hurry.
Mm-hmm. And then we obviously remove the skewer. It's a metal skewer, by the way. We take the tail meat out. And then we take most of the inside of the body out. And that is, and then we break open the shells, break down the shells, and that's what we make our stock with. And it just, like I said, it produces such a beautiful stock, and that stock becomes the foundation for our lobster soup. And our lobster soup becomes a foundation for our cognac and lobster cream, which is what I do with the vol-au-vent. You can very simply just reduce down lobster stock, add a roux, add cream, and season it with cognac, a little bit of pinch of cayenne, salt, and black pepper, and you can heat up all your seafood, butter poach the lobster, sear a sea scallop, maybe saute some diced shrimp, and finish with that sauce a little bit. I like to add a little bit of shallot mushrooms, button mushrooms that have been sauteed until caramelized, and a little bit of fresh chive, and put that in the vol-au-vent, and you're absolutely in heaven. Green salad.
If you want to head south and play with a lobster like an Italian.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same process and make the stock. Lobster meat is out of the shell. Reduce that stock with tomato, crushed tomato, and paste, and make it spicy. Throw a Calabrian chili in there and garlic and get that relatively tight as a sauce.
Mm-hmm.
That with the lobster, with just name your shape on pasta, you know. Tagliatelle is one of the nicest ones. Spaghetti is really popular that way. The squid ink spaghetti that we were talking about at the beginning is great that way. It's one more element of flavor. Same idea, different place, but same treatment of the lobster, different place. Same utilization of the shell to make that stock, which is so important.
Mm-hmm. By the way, if you want to look up vol-au-vent, it's three words, V-O-L-A-U-V-E-N-T, vol-au-vent. You can look up a video. Lobster. How else, Tony?
I mean, lobster salad is a great thing. You know, that's what I always think of, you know, with like avocados and maybe a little mandarins and fresh basil, or, you know, basil and cilantro both. But that requires boiling that lobster, getting it exactly right, cooling it, cleaning it out and, you know, and getting really pretty slices mm-hmm. from everything. But it, as a composed mm-hmm. salad, mm-hmm. that's really one of the marvelous things.
Tarragon mayonnaise, also great. Also great. Oh, yeah. Little shallot, maybe a little Brunoise celery. I like the idea of the blood orange blood orange, any kind of orange.
Yeah, so say mandarin with blood orange.
Yeah, too.
It's right. Funny how that's like immediately like, oh, orange is exactly what mm-hmm. you want there.
Well, you know, over time, lemon verbena has become one of my absolute favorite things, and I love lemon verbena with lobster as well. So you could make a vinaigrette, or you could marinate the lobster in a little lemon verbena and lime and extra virgin olive oil, shallot, and then remove that and serve it with greens and baby red romaine or whatever. Lots of good things.
You need
lots
beautiful china, a great glass plate, or
something.
A little over the top, and you also need very good champagne, very cold.
mm-hmm. I also was thinking about that. Like with a salad, doing cocoa beans, which are a little white bean, and doing those sort of garlicky, olive oily, you know, nice acid, lemon, maybe red wine vinegar, as long as it's not too strong, not too much. But doing some sort of little white bean salad, and as you say, you know, have the slices of the lobster out, and I can just see that salad nice and cold, and you know, good oil, good extra virgin olive oil, that, you know, just some fresh herbs, fresh chives. I mean, gosh, it just seafood is just such an incredible vehicle. There's so many things you can do with it.
Sardinians will basically throw lobster on a big live fire. You know, and that smoky flavor that comes from that, when you clean that guy out, cut it into pieces, and it's a chickpea and tomato salad that has a little spice to it that lobster goes into, and oh man.
Oh, I love chickpeas.
That's happy times. That okay. The great red wine, that's one of those situations where it's a red wine that's going to work with the dish. Mm-hmm. You know, Cannonau is the most important red variety in Sardinia, and it's a relative of Grenache or Garnacha in Spain. And it the best producers, like Dettori, who is the best producer, Dettori, or another excellent one is Pala, Pala. That big, rich, soft reds that can carry that off. I mean, speaking about lobster from Maryland, I mean, obviously, crabs are the thing, right?
Right.
You watch Monday Night Football, and it's "Welcome to the big crab cake," you know, like the commentator says. So, and there's so many things that's definitely we have to move crabs aside as their own. We'll have to do an entire program on there.
Yeah,
no question. That's
too much to talk about.
No, it's yes, yeah. and too much detail in history mm-hmm. and tradition to dig in. So when we come back on Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine, we're going to have to deal with shrimp, Cindy.
Yes.
I know you love shrimp.
Love them.
And then cephalopods and all the wines that go with those guys on Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine on WIPR. Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we're running through shellfish and cephalopods today. And we just moved crabs to their own special category for another program. Mm-hmm. But let's talk about shrimp. We haven't talked about shrimp yet.
Well, I think one of the things that I really would like to convey to folks is that working with shrimp with the heads on when you can find them really makes a big difference when you're making a pan sauce.
They're not scary. They're not insects.
They're not in any way scary. Yeah.
They have a lot of flavor.
And what happens is, yeah, it has a lot of, exactly. So what happens is there's a pocket of fat in the back of the head of the shrimp that melts out as you are heating the shrimp in the cooking process. And that is beautiful color. It's a coral color and it is tremendous flavor. So we might as well talk about shrimp and grits because it's something I've made for years. And It's a very loved dish in the South. The one that I make, I saute head-on shrimp in a little bit of corn oil. When they're about three quarters of the way done, we add a brunoise, or the smallest of dice of andouille sausage, and tasso ham, both products traditional to the New Orleans area. And they have good spice and good seasoning in them, and they impart flavor into the sauce as well. And then I deglaze the pan with white wine and finish with cold pieces of butter to make a emulsified sauce in the pan and finish with chives. And I don't add any salt. I don't add anything else. It doesn't need anything else. And what you're looking for is a nice thick sauce with that cold butter. And you need to get that out of the pan the moment that butter has melted, or it will break and separate and turn into a big old mess. And of course, we serve that over creamy grits. And our grits are actually made, we call them creamy, but they're made with milk, a tiny bit of butter and salt. And grits take about 35 to 40 minutes of gentle heating, gentle cooking over low heat to become ready to go. So obviously you're making your grits first, and then very quickly you have a very quick entree for the family or for yourself with that shrimp dish.
Now, the most classic version of that is the one where the shrimp are just sautéed with garlic and butter, mm-hmm. and just served on creamy grits, and that's the breakfast.
Sure.
Like the shrimpers come in with the shrimp and make some for breakfast that way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really happy version. I'll tell you what.
That's been my experience when I used to live down in Charleston. It's so fun. It's such an exciting thing to bring those shrimp in from a creek, and that's what you run home to at 6 a.m.
Absolutely. All right. Should we tackle the world of calamari?
Yes. I love calamari. Well, you go first, Donnie.
Cephalopods. So you have, it's sort of like going from soprano to tenor to bass, right? Calamari to cuttlefish to octopus.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of remember that if you're talking about wine-wise with those three, because it really kind of follows the same way. My all-time favorite calamari usage of any kind I've ever had was you and I had dinner at a restaurant long time ago in Paris, and the dish was Dover sole, and it was cooked perfectly and a little crisp on the outside, and the garnish, the sauce and the garnish, very simple butter sauce but with a lot of wine, and tiny calamari rings.
Tiny ones.
And artichoke.
Perfectly cooked.
You know, little like slivers, like batonnet almost, of artichoke bottom through that sauce with a good amount of lemon to it. And I was just like, man, that is exactly... Calamari has a very particular flavor. It's a very, like, it's of the sea. It doesn't really taste like anything else but its bigger brothers, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it really set off the sole and a little bitterness of the artichoke. That was just like a perfect little trio. And the tanginess of the lemon is like, okay. All right. And it's funny. And I can taste that like it's in front of me right this moment.
I agree. And
that
it was
a
your
perfect
dish. Thank goodness you let me taste it, because I can taste that right now too. That restaurant was called L'Astor. And the thing with calamari is the smaller it is, obviously, the less you cook it. And if you overcook calamari, it's like eating rubber bands. You've all gone to some restaurant and had fried calamari where it's like eating rubber bands, and you're like, what in the world is this? I hate calamari. And that's why. If it's,
you'll get them treated. You'll get them all kinds of different ways.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh.
You won't get the entire fresh calamari. They will have been frozen. They will have been chemically treated.
Yeah.
You don't want
it can
that.
It can be just fantastic. And with, you know, I make a calamari and house-made pork sausage risotto that is one of my favorite things that I've ever made. And I revisit that every now and then. And at the end of the cooking, I add slices of calamari, and literally I don't even put it in the pan while the heat's still on. The heat from the risotto is enough to cook that calamari before it goes onto the plate for the guest. And that just tells you when you have sliced it. Now, back in the day when we opened our little French bistro, we used to do, and I think about this every now and then, and that was not my recipe. It was the person that was a chef there at the time's recipe, I believe. I'm sure you guided him through it. It was a stuffed calamari. And so that was the whole tube with the, it had like, you know, breadcrumb and I think tomato and a little bit of maybe truffle something in it.
A classic Marseillaise dish.
Oh my gosh, that was also. I mean, I think if you want to try something as a cook in your house that's adventurous, I think figuring out how to cook stuffed calamari, stuffed squid, is really. I think you will have achieved something, and you should be very, very proud of yourself if you want to try something like that. It's a longer cook time because the tube, you're using the whole tube. They will be bigger, and it needs to be simmered for a period of time in order for the whole dish to become tender and for the stuffing to cook.
My guess is that was probably a good like 14, 15 minutes in the oven. But the moisture of the whole thing is what makes the calamari stay nice.
Mm-hmm.
The best fried calamari I've ever had, by far, was there was a little town outside of Palermo, and there was a restaurant by the dock there. And for some strange reason, I was staying there before opening a Mediterranean restaurant, doing food research, wine research, stayed in a little hotel that was close to this fishing dock, and there's a little restaurant there, and no name on the restaurant. There were just a couple of tables out front.
Wow.
Like on the street.
Awesome.
And so I'm walking, and I see this guy come up with a boat to the dock, and he starts unloading seafood. And I'm like, and I was trying to learn Italian at that time and trying to talk with a guy. And he told me that all of this was for his brother. That was his brother's restaurant.
Huh.
So it was Pete who was with me.
Okay.
And so we went back, 2 hours later to that restaurant to see what he had and went in the kitchen and saw all the different stuff
that
he had.
That's great. What a great experience.
He had the tiniest little baby calamari. I mean, little teeny tiny guys.
Oh.
And pulled the beaks and fried them whole. And pulled the beaks in the ink sack and fried them whole. Oh my gosh.
I bet they were amazing.
Oh my gosh. They were, especially with the lemons that you get Sicily and in the south of Italy.
Yeah, what
you've seen some of those guys in Campania that are nuts. Just that.
So good.
And the
what
least complicated way of battering the things in the world. I mean, it's flour and sparkling water and that's it.
I wonder where would you go to get. See, I never buy seafood in grocery stores, so trying to think, can people get... I think you can get calamari pretty easily around here, probably at the better stores, right?
Well, and I would think certainly with asking if you want them for an event or something.
I don't think I've ever seen octopus in a grocery, but I also haven't been looking.
No, yeah, we have a lot of seafood available to us. We do not have the seafood market in Barcelona.
No. Oh.
Which is one of the more epic things that you'll...
That is epic.
That you'll ever see. Mm-hmm. And by noon, it's like gone.
Sure.
It's just about
gone.
Sure,
that's their goal. Yeah. They're probably there at 4 a.m., 5 a.m. Oh.
Yeah. It's nuts.
When can we travel again?
Do you remember having cuttlefish in Barcelona?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. You sat with me. We sat at a little counter, and
so good.
And watched them cook it on a plancha with salt and olive oil.
Yeah,
it's the whole thing.
That's it. That's what's so amazing. Yeah,
It wasn't even sliced. It was just like throw a plate with a couple of cuttlefish on it to you.
Oh.
Cuttlefish I love because they're thick. They're not that much bigger than calamari, but they're thicker. Mm-hmm. So you get. If you get a bit of a sear on the outside, you get a real texture variation, and it's really, really nice.
Yeah,
that I don't know how a consumer can find.
No, I think that experience was ridiculous because we had those potatoes there too. We had something else there that was just But getting to see the seafood before it's cooked in the case there, right in front of you, is pretty amazing too. Obviously, that's a lot of confidence in the product to have it right there on display for everybody to see. It's so great.
Yeah, I'm certain that restaurant / tapas bar still exists. Cerveceria Catalana, Catalan brewery.
Go there immediately when you go to Barcelona. Get off the plane, go there and eat.
Yeah, that was
have
that
a glass
was happy
of wine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we went back there with the whole group and had a bit what Jorge Ordóñez would call a seafood attack.
All right, so we have to talk about octopus.
Yeah, octopus.
So what's
of
your
a project.
Secret, Tony? Yep. What's your secret? How do you make it?
You have to do a really good job braising it. Mm-hmm. That's. And I don't think that the old wives' thing about
to cork,
putting a cork in the braising, but do a really good job braising it. And for me, there's always red wine in the braising.
Okay.
You know, and there's always garlic in the braising. Octopus is much. It's much meatier. Honestly, it's always a red wine match for me. You know, it's like light white for calamari, rich white, or lighter red like a Rioja can be really good for cuttlefish. But octopus, it wants red wine that's like a Mediterranean red that has some power to it. You can also use Malbec for octopus. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, that's, you braise it, you rest it long enough, you know, it's got to sit out for a little while and kind of relax from what you just did to it. Yeah. And then once it's cooled down, then you cut into the portions that you want. And getting the little guys, getting the younger ones, are what you want.
Yeah.
You want something that's that the head is like the size of a softball on the octopus is about right.
Richard Olney has a book called Lulu's Provençal Table. Oh, I love this book so much. And that is he's basically been cooking with this lady in Provence and learning all of her secrets. And she talks about making octopus, and she freezes it before she makes it, which I thought was fascinating. I had no idea that someone would intentionally do that.
Oh, she's probably trying to dry it out.
Yeah, I just was really surprised by that. So, or it breaks it down somehow, does something
to make it more tender. It definitely is better after braising it if you cool it and refrigerate it, and then, you know, and in a couple of hours. Then slice it into the portions that you want. And then especially like grilling one of those tentacles.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Just season it well, grill it, and give it some. That's what I always think of like a bean and like bitter green salad, you know, a tomato vinaigrette, something very straightforward. But again, one of those big canonau from Sardinia or even Chateau de Pape.
Do you remove the little cups from the tentacles? Or do you leave them on?
Leave them on.
Whatever you call them. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
When they're smaller, they're not an issue. When they're big guys, they're an issue.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Because I think the first time I ever made octopus, I removed those because they sort of freaked me out, quite frankly. And it seemed sort of like they were hard. So I'm like, But yes, then we get small ones now, so it really isn't a problem. But the way that takes on the flavor of the grill is just amazing.
Oh,
I strongly suggest grilling it. And the
better the grill, the better the fire,
right.
If
you have a wood burning grill, it's really going to be spectacular.
Oh, all right. You know what's fun? Mm-hmm. Like big rich California Cabernet Sauvignon, grilled octopus. Maybe you're not thinking octopus for your next barbecue, but now I am.
Yeah, that's good.
Anyway. That's all we've got time for. If you want to listen to this program or any one of our others, go to the WYPR website, wypr.org. Look for the Foreman Wolf page and look up past podcasts. If you want to correspond with us via email, foremanwolf@wypr.org. If you want to follow Chef Cindy Wolf on social media,
you can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram as Chef Wolf.
My Instagram is The Real Tony Foreman. And thanks so much for listening.
Happy Sunday.
Support for WYPR comes from the Park School of Baltimore's Saturday morning Rise and Shine activity sessions for children 3 to 5 years of age. Nature expedition through the Park School woods is April 20th. parkschool.net/shine.